Welcome, 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 everybody. It's Naama Segal Karas, and this is How Do You Jew, the podcast that highlights the diversity of the Jewish experience so that we can increase Achdut Israel and finally get Geula already. I have an amazing guest with me today. Again, never interviewed a social media phenomenon before, but he has kindly agreed to show up in my world. You may know him as that guy who used to be not Jewish and then became Jewish, I think, personally, just to give a finger to all the anti-Zionist pro-Pallies. But maybe he has more reasons than that. I don't know. We have an incredible guest today. He is professionally, he works in education. He loves working with lizards and reptiles. He is happily married. He started off his journey before as a non-Jew, realized that he needed some perfecting, eventually converted to Judaism last year, Gregorian-wise. But he has truly changed my perspective when it comes to social media influencers and what the power of Hashem can do when it's possible to just open a book, open a Tanakh, open a Siddur, start to learn, if only for the purposes of educating oneself, and suddenly realizing, oh, I belong here. This guy is amazing. Please, please, please give a warm welcome to Robert George.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm trying to do the applause thing. It doesn't work. So how are you on this beautiful evening?
I am doing wonderful. Just, you know, survived a Monday. So the fact that I survived a Monday is always a great thing. Absolutely. Mondays are always the best day of the week. And especially in education, when all the kids are coming back from the weekend.
Sure. Is that your sarcastic voice?
No, not at all.
Oh, exactly. All right. Beautiful. Well, for those folks who may be new, I always ask the same questions every single time in this podcast. I actually stole the idea, no lie, from Inside the Actor's Studio, a show that may or may not still be on A&E or some other channel. It's for old people who like Antiques Roadshow. And those questions at the end are always the same. I love those questions. And so I have a series that I always ask. So the first one we always open with is, tell me your origin story. Tell me a little bit about how little baby Robert became big boy Robert, became convert Jew Robert.
Ready? Okay, so, all right. So let me start by giving you my background. I actually grew up in a Catholic / Muslim household. So that always catches people off guard. So I'll go ahead and explain that.
Whiplash. Wow. Okay.
All right. So just a little bit of background. I was born into a Catholic family, and my mother eventually married a Muslim man from Egypt. So I grew up, you know, from a very young age, going to Catholic school during the day, but then coming home and living in an Islamic household at night. And so that was just, you know, how I grew up. I didn't think there was anything, you know, strange or off about it. That was just, you know, normal life to me. And for a bit of religious background, I was born into Catholicism. I was baptized. I was confirmed. However, and this is where, in a way, the story kind of really begins. When I was about 14 years old, I converted to Islam.
What?
Now, oh yeah, no, I know this story. But there's a story here. So I was interested in it at the time. You know, it was something that I was constantly around, and I realized I lived with it, but I didn't know anything about it. And so when I started looking into it, I learned one verse of the Quran, and I still know it. Okay. But of course I'm being encouraged by, you know, extended family. And there was one night at the mosque where we were visited by a very famous sheikh by the name of Sheikh Yusuf Estes. He has his own Wikipedia page to give you an idea of how well known he is. Oh. Once your name has a blue link, you're known. But anyway, so he calls me up because he hears that, like, there's this 14-year-old kid that is, you know, that is interested in Islam. Because I had been going for like a couple months at this point. And he calls me up in front of the entire mosque. The mosque is packed to the brim. And he's like, hey, I need you to repeat after me. And he had me say some words. Yep. And then when I finished saying the words, he hugged me and said, when I said it, I cried. I remember he whispered that into my ear. He basically had me say the Shahada in front of the entire mosque.
And you didn't know that you were saying the Shahada?
I did not know I was saying the Shahada.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I have opinions and thoughts. Go on.
Oh, trust me. I think our thoughts and opinions are going to be totally in sync on that. Looking back on that, I was like, why did the adults in the room let this happen? But anyway, moving on. So I lived like that for about a couple of years, and I struggled, you know, with faith at the time. You know, it eventually, I'm going to, you know, cut some stuff here just to, for the sake of time, but eventually it led to me becoming a, just the tension between having to live as a Muslim, but still being like internally Christian at the time, it led to me becoming a full-on hardcore new atheist. You remember Richard Dawkins? You remember Christopher Hitchens when they were the headlines of the time when everyone on Reddit with the neckbeard was all about the new atheism movement? You remember those times? Good times.
Vaguely, yes.
Oh, well, long story short, there's a like, you have the kind of atheists, you know, they just don't believe in God, and that's, you know, totally fine. But then you had this movement of new atheism that what they wanted to do was go out of their way to argue with people that believed.
Yeah, that's how, like, they get off.
Mm-hmm. That was how they get off. And unfortunately, I was one of those people. And I'm not very proud of that, but that's who.
Did
but
you
that's
have
what,
the neck beard, though?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was, the only thing I didn't have was the fedora. But
now, if you become Jewish enough, honey, it'll swing all the way around. You'll get your fedora back.
One day. But yeah, so let me go ahead and cut ahead. So I eventually, you know, I struggled with, you know, religious belief, and I just did what I could to purge it from within me.
Okay.
Because it was just, I just did not have a good relationship with religion at all.
Sounds like it. That sounds like a setup to fail. Wow.
Oh yeah. So let me go ahead and jump ahead. I kind of have to switch tracks for a little bit to make the second part of the story make a little bit of sense. So at around the same time, you know, growing up in a Muslim household, you can imagine that opinions of Israel and of Jews were not always the most glorious. They were not always the most welcoming. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, I want to be completely fair. That being said, it was not a case of where we were just constantly talking about the Jews and Israel. It was actually very rare that it was discussed in the house. However, when it was, you know, not positive. Mm-hmm. So I did have a default Free Palestine position well into my early
20s.
Now, let me tell you what changed. What changed was I took a college course on international relations. And when I was taking this class, there was a paper we had to write, and I do not remember the prompt of the paper. However, I decided I was going to write a paper just tearing Israel apart.
Sounds like a very college student thing to do.
Yes, it was. But however, I decided I was going to do it the right way. I was going to read Israeli sources.
Oh, boy.
So the first book, and it's actually sitting on my shelf, and I've been meaning to read it again ever since, 1948 by Benny Morris. And I was like, oh. And I remember reading and I was like, oh, this is a little different than I thought their viewpoint was actually going to be. I feel like I missed something somewhere along the line. Now that did not switch me from being pro-Palestine to being pro-Israel, but it did make me go kind of like, I clearly don't understand this enough. Yeah, sure. I don't like certain things that I hear out of the news, but, you know, whatever. And I kind of went neutral on it for many, many years. Mm-hmm. Until October 8th.
Okay.
Now, there's a reason I say October 8th, and I'm speaking a bit figuratively. This is not literally what happens when it played out. Mm-hmm. But when October 7th happened in 2023, it didn't affect me. It was not something that I thought it was tragic. I thought it was sad. And I was like, wow, like that was bad. Like that was, you know, messed up that happened. But that's on the other side of the planet, and I have my own things going on. So like, it really just did not resonate with me.
Yeah.
However, the next, literally in the months following, I say October 8th, but it was really more of a drawn out thing where a lot of the people that I knew and a lot of the people that I thought were decent human beings and a lot of people that, you know, actually really respected me, because I was actually known for being I was always a loudmouth, but I don't want to get too much into the political side of things. But what I do want to say is that people were very surprised by me when I came out and said, hey guys, crazy thought here. What Hamas said on October 7th was wrong. Mm. It was something that they could not really, people like, so many people that I knew could not compute with. They just couldn't compute with them. And I was shocked. I was truly just blown away by just the sheer evil that people were saying. And people were coming at me because they were like, oh, you're a genocide baby eating, babe, Zio supporting, whatever, like, you know, all the, you know, the good ones, the classics.
Oh,
you know?
I do.
Yeah, you know, all the good stuff. And, you know, it led to a lot of my relationships like with people that I had known for many years actually collapsing. And my joke, and I actually joked about this on the radio show that I did last week, that my, like, you know, you're like the amount of Facebook friends you have. My joke is that it turned into an egg timer. You could refresh it and just watch it go down.
Oh, wow.
Now, a lot of these people, to be fair, these were just, these were people that, you know, maybe I knew from like the local like metal scene, because that's, you know, something that I did on the side. You know, I used to play in a band. But then there were people that like I knew for years. You know, I'd gone to school with them, I had worked with them, and they were the, and they started cutting me off left and right. So that's going on one side. And at the same time, as I was finding myself where I, what I thought that at the time was a weird position, where I was somebody who considered myself relatively pro-Pali defending Israel, mm-hmm. I realized I didn't know anything about Judaism. All I thought Judaism was at the time was you take a Bible, rip off the New Testament, and bam, you have Judaism. Just the Old Testament. There you go.
Oh, okay.
And I knew that, and I knew who Jewish people, I knew that Jewish people were a thing. Mm-hmm. I have distant relatives that are Jewish, but like that's just like an interesting quirk. It's an interesting quality. It wasn't anything that, you know, I really registered. I was, oh, they just don't believe in Jesus. Good for them. Right. And so separately, now this is where, you know, you it's in your intro, you actually said something that I wanted to touch upon, like, oh, did he do it to spit? I forget how you phrased it. So I'm paraphrasing.
To piss off the anti-Zionists.
To piss off the anti-Zionists and all them. Yeah. So I want to establish like right from the beginning that that was actually something that I was consciously trying to avoid.
Oh, wow. Okay. Very magnanimous of you.
So obviously as I'm doing a lot more support for, you know, Israel. And by the way, this is before I actually did like a TikTok thing. I was actually just doing Facebook posts that people would message me at 3 a.m. in the morning to yell at me for. I started studying Judaism, that was actually separate from my supporting of Israel, like if that makes any sense.
It does, yes.
Yeah, so obviously I am educating myself more on the conflict and the history of the conflict. And over time, it naturally made me much more pro-Israel that I stopped. In the very beginning, what I remember a status that I posted, and the status was, and I will emphasize, this is not my viewpoint anymore, but what I said at the time was, I support Palestine over Israel, but I support Israel over Hamas.
Okay.
That was my viewpoint. Mm-hmm. It's not my viewpoint anymore, but that's what it was at the time.
That's called evolution. That's called mm-hmm. growing. That's what grown-ups do.
We don't do that grown-up stuff around here. So I started educating myself a lot more, and I still did the same thing where I was reading, and you can even see in some of my older videos, I was reading some pro-Palestine stuff even during this journey, but I was like, sorry. Like, yeah, sure. Like, I get that, you know, this, like, it's not a clean conflict. No conflict ever is. But I'm siding with Israel on this one. This one makes a lot more sense to me. So that's the pro-Israel side. And then the studying of the Judaism, when I became more exposed to it because, of course, you know how YouTube algorithms work. You know how TikTok algorithms work. I became exposed to Rabbi Tovia Singer. I had the pleasure of meeting him.
I am waiting for the day he will be willing to come on my podcast. I am waiting.
Just send him an email, maybe, because I will tell you,
I'm so nervous to ask him.
Hey, here's what I say to that. The worst thing he can say is no.
I guess. I mean, if I could get Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, I could probably get Tovia Singer.
Yeah, and literally the worst thing he can ever say is no. And if he says no, you move on. That's what you do in life. That's how life works.
Well, no, so, first we kvetch, honey. That's then we move on. But we complain about it once a year at a meal.
See, I'm still learning the kvetching part. I'm getting better at it, but that's probably one of the few Jewish traits I'm yet to fully take on, but I'm working on it. I'm improving on it. So every day a little bit more. So I start studying Judaism a lot more. And the first thing that I noticed was that it simply made a lot more sense. Now, I don't want to spend too much time, you know, talking down on anyone's faith, on anyone else's religion. However, you know, one of the main aspects I could not accept about Christianity was the Trinity, the idea of original sin, the idea of the Immaculate Conception. Just a lot of those things just did not make sense to me. The whole Trinity just, and when I say I tried, I was reading like the church fathers. I was reading like the old, like 1,000-year-old stuff, just trying to make mm-hmm. sense of it. And that's why, like, even though I tried going back to Christianity several times in my life, it never clicked.
Right.
It never clicked. So when I'm about to abuse a term. And so bear with me when I say this. Compared to a lot of other things I've studied, the theology in Judaism is simple. Now, I am abusing that word. But what I mean by that is that it does not take a lot to explain Jewish theology. Yes, you can go down the rabbit hole. You can get into Maimonides. You can get into Abraham Heschel, who, by the way, I love. But you could just say, you know, there's one God. And then on the other side of that, I like how I loved it, how Judaism treats responsibility and how it treats the idea of the Yetzer Hara, for example, where, like, yes, you are in charge of, you have the power to decide to turn away from sin. You have the power to do things. And you are not some fallen, dirty, you know, creature that has been corrupted beyond any kind of redemption. You know, right. One of the, and I know this, I'm probably jumping the gun a little bit here, but when it comes to Judaism, one of the things that I really sincerely appreciate about it was, are you doing something wrong? Are you sorry? Stop doing it. Say you're sorry and be a better person. Like, and to me, it's like, you can't get better than that. You can't. Like, I don't understand.
I have to paint a very simple picture for those folks maybe who have always been Jewish and don't necessarily get where Robert's coming from. There are people in this country, a lot of them, because we're a tiny friggin' minority of a minority, but there's a lot of people who are born and raised to believe that you are doomed from the moment you land here. That you are cursed or damned or, you know, sinned or whatever phrase you want to use. And you're effectively beyond redemption with the exception of one very, very narrow pathway. And as a 20-year veteran pagan before I came back to Judaism, having tasted all the religions except Islam, I can tell you, I also struggled very, very heavily with original sin and those concepts, because to me it made no sense that a newborn infant who's done nothing and has no track record somehow magically has already messed up. It got very confusing very quickly. And then reading the history of the Catholic Church just kind of solidified that. So I completely get where you're coming from. People who maybe from birth will not get it at all, because to them, to us, it's like, well, what are you talking about? Of course you can always apologize. Hello?
Yeah. Like, yeah. And that's... Yeah, and to me, that was just one of the most beautiful things about it, amongst, you know, many other things. But that was one of the things that really first drew me in, where, excuse me, you're responsible for your actions. And, you know, it's on you to borrow a phrase from the Christians, resist temptation, to resist the Yetzer Hara.
Absolutely.
And just to add a little bit more onto that, because you said you didn't taste Islam. I want to tell you about a little story that happened. It actually didn't happen to me. It happened in my family. My grandfather had passed away, because what Christianity and Islam both do is that they have a supersessionist aspect to them. In other words, Christianity believes that it cancels out Judaism, right, and Islam believes it cancels out Christianity and Judaism.
Right.
And the way that this manifests is that they believe that if you choose to be a Christian or a Jew, you're going to hell when you die.
Right.
Now, when my grandfather passed away, a Muslim member of the family said to my mother, on the day that I don't remember if it was on the day he died or the day of the funeral, but it was something along the lines of, like, you know, it's too bad that he went to hell.
Wow. Read the room, dude. Holy shit.
Yeah. And so it's like, I've racked up these little points against other faiths that I can't really forgive, you know, certain things that happens.
Yeah.
So I just want to add that little aside, but let me move on with the Judaism story. That's what you want to know about. All right.
Yeah,
now,
for sure.
Now, I'm addressing the Judaism side, not the pro-Israel thing. So with me studying more into Judaism, looking more into it, I finally decided the time was to get a hold of a rabbi. Maybe I need to talk about this a little bit more. And this is over the summer of I was studying from about September of, maybe January of 2024, until about September of 2025. And in that time period, I made contact with an Orthodox group, and I forget exactly who they were, but their fee for conversion, like their conversion classes, which would have made me eligible for Israeli citizenship, like right out of the gate, it was just too expensive for me to afford. I'm not going to dog them. So I'm not going to name who they were. Cause, you know, it was a wonderful program. I just couldn't do it. Then I tried making contact with a Reform synagogue, couldn't get a response to an email. Weird. And then I made
say I was surprised, but I'm not.
And then, but here's where it gets interesting, at least for me personally. I decided that I was going to go through conservative Judaism because I was like, okay, I like how the Orthodox have their more traditional way of doing things, but I like how Reform does try to stay relatively modern in the modern world. I like both of that, and conservative seems to meet right in the middle. So that was my mentality at the time, and really still is. And so I simply looked up conservative Jews, and there was a synagogue less than 20 minutes from my house.
Okay.
So I made an appointment with the rabbi.
Do you live BFE? Is that why that's significant?
I was just shocked by how close it was. So I made an appointment with the rabbi. I sat down, talked to him for an hour. I don't remember too much about it, but because that was such a long time ago at this point. And, you know, it was a really good conversation. And I proceeded to not show up to that synagogue for another 6 months.
Okay.
I was still studying. I was still interested, but I don't remember why I didn't follow up right away. I did get on their mailing list, so I was keeping up with like that particular synagogue, and I don't remember why it took too long for me to go back. But what I can tell you was during this time is when I started making my Jewish friends, my Israeli friends, you know, through the work that I was doing, you know, on TikTok and on social media, where, you know, my videos started out as just supporting, you know, the Jewish community. The first video I ever did was a video just saying, hey, just so you know, if anyone says anything bad against you, that just means that you've already won the argument. It was something like that. You could probably, it's buried deep within my videos. It was just something like that. And that was my first little blow up, if that makes any sense. And I remember it was such an interesting experience because all like the big, within our small little niche, with all the creators that I was following, all of a sudden started following me. And I was like, oh, wow. And so that was my first little exposure. I actually started making Israeli friends. So I started getting, you know, I was still studying, but now I'm actually hearing it from the source. Because really at this time, I didn't know that many Jews. I had one Jewish friend at this time. And when I say one, I mean like practicing. I had a couple friends that were like, you know, grew up in Jewish families. But like, I knew more from reading Wikipedia than they did. It's a great place to get started, but at some point you got to get past it.
No, but that's really like, if you took the Jewish demographic and sliced a slice out of it, that would be how most Jews fall out, is most of them are not observant. They don't know their own religion very well. It's just not, it's an Americanization thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I started making Jewish friends, Israeli friends. So of course I'm interested about it. We're having conversations. But what really turned the dial for me over time was that as, you know, anti-Semitic attacks were happening around the world, and, you know, this is back during, like, the height of the war in Gaza. Mm-hmm. Whenever reports of losses came out, whenever reports of hostage bodies came out, that pain started feeling very, very personal. It started connecting with me in a way that it wasn't just something sad to read about in the news anymore. Now it actually started like resonating with me. And the big culmination to this is the morning when the news about the B-bus children came out. Because I remember it was about 3 or 4 a.m. where I am, and I burst awake. Not my phone didn't go off, but like I burst awake really early in the morning, and I checked my phone, you know, always a great thing to do. And that's when the news came out. Mm-hmm. And I realized right then, and it was a Friday. I'll never forget it. It was a Friday. And I said to my wife that morning that like, I need to go to service tonight. I need to go to the synagogue tonight. And that night was the first night I ever attended a Jewish service of any kind. And the rabbi recognized me. This is like, you know, 6 months later, but he remembered me. And I started going almost every weekend ever since. I've been a bit naughty lately, but I've been consistently going.
Game knows game.
Yeah. Right after that visit, you know, we started having meetings, and a lot of my actual journey into the conversion was a lot of just like assigned reading and self-study he guided me, he checked in with what I knew, but a lot of it was, you know, really kind of doing it myself. And then it was actually just this past January. It was near the end of the past January. I don't have the date on me, but that was when I finally went into the mikveh. I went before the Beit Din. I stripped down right down to the way, you know, God made us. And I went into the mikveh, did the blessings, and I emerged a Jew.
Mazel tov. So I'm curious. I have like 1,000 questions.
Please go ahead.
Before I ask them, I'm going to give you some context. So And you listeners, all two of you who have heard this podcast before, you know that I'm a 9-year Baal Tshuva. I came back to Judaism in my 30s after spending 20 years as a diehard pagan and was raised with no religion at all, totally Chiloni family. My mother was Israeli. My father was Israeli by way of Romania. He was a Holocaust survivor. She was a fifth generation Israeli from the 1860s pogroms. And when I was growing up, you know, I was told that converts had to go through XYZ, blah, blah, blah. Eventually, I go through my pagan journey, and then I come back to Judaism, and then I meet my husband. And my husband, born and raised Catholic in the wilds of Western Michigan, you know, eventually somehow by the grace of God decides he wants to convert like a crazy person and does convert and ends up converting in 2024 after we moved to Ohio. What I noticed for that experience was that, and maybe you noticed it, maybe you didn't, I don't know. But I'm curious, because you said it was conservative versus Orthodox conversion. By the way, dunking in the water is the same water. Like, it's not extra fancy Orthodox water. It's just water. but I'm just curious, was your Beit Din all conservative rabbis? Were any of them Orthodox? How did that work?
So my rabbi, who was a conservative rabbi, it was him and it was two other members of the congregation, because according to my reading, and you know, I'm not the expert, different Beit Dins for different purposes can have different compositions. So there are some Beit Dins for certain purposes that do require all three rabbis. Mm-hmm. From what I recall, and someone may be able to, you know, pinpoint why I'm wrong here, but it, to the best of my knowledge, a conversion does require at least, you know, one rabbi and at least two Jews, but to be fair to the Jews that were on the Beit Din, these were not just lay people. These were people that, you know, I know from the congregation that were very, very knowledgeable. And the source, because I actually was concerned about that slightly, because, you know, even though I do not believe you have to go through Orthodoxy to be a legitimate Jew, to clarify one thing, just because I don't want to be taken out of context, Reform is just as much of a valid form of Judaism as Orthodox is. So to me, it's all 100% valid, no matter which path you choose. I just want to make sure I say that. Now, I was concerned about the conversion procedure because I had heard horror stories of you know, people claiming to be rabbis, basically filling up a kiddie pool and claiming that was a mikveh. Now, I knew better than that, but, you know, I don't know the technicalities. You know, I'm not a rabbi. And so I asked my rabbi, and, you know, he actually was able to appoint me to the Shulchan Aruch. And I read it for myself, and I was like, okay, sweet. So, yeah, it has the procedure very clearly laid out, and that procedure was adhered to.
Well, good. And by the way, you're correct. I have also read that particular passage from the Shulchan Aruch, and you need three tzaddikim. Mm-hmm. You need three tzaddikim. That's what it says. Because we don't have a Sanhedrin anymore. So you need three tzaddikim. You need three righteous men who are Torah observant, Shabbat observant, and keep kosher. That's the requirement. And then in Galut, we've gone over the deep end about all the rest of it. But no, a kiddie pool doesn't count. But yes, that's exactly what I was curious about. Only because, like, the way my husband described it, it was like, I was in the mikveh preparation area and there was all these rabbis and I didn't expect so many. And I was like, was there like 15 or 20? Like, what are you talking about? So I wasn't sure if it was like the same for you or if it was like in a proper mikveh or was like a lake or how that worked. I was just curious.
So it was a mikveh that was in a synagogue, but that mikveh, which you had to actually pay quite a bit to. Oh, and I think I just set off my AI thing. How do I turn this off? Sorry, my thing just started going off.
No, Skynet. Can you still hear me? Not right now, Skynet.
Wait, hold on a second. Sorry, hold on. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, no, I must have set off the AI thing. So the synagogue that I went to does have a mikveh in the place itself, but it does route through a nearby stream or a nearby river that supplies the water itself. So it's not just, you know, chlorinated pool water or anything. No, and actually that was one of the reasons that they have a price that you, in order to be able to use it, because it is built to take in natural water.
Yep. That's what defines a mikveh. Again, fun factoid for the listeners, all two of you, a mikveh literally means a place where the waters are assembled. or the waters are gathered. And the gathering means waters that are free flowing, meaning rain, river, or ocean, gathered together in a space that I believe, don't quote me, I'm not a rabbi, I don't play one on TikTok, 2000 amot, which is a measurement from the Torah, which is effectively the size of a jacuzzi.
That squares.
Yeah, that's basically what a mikveh constitutes. And thank God we have the ones in buildings now with heaters. But that's amazing. Beautiful. Now, my big question about this origin piece here before we move on is, did you feel any different?
I did. When I came out of the mikveh, it was, I don't like using the word high because I feel like that's a bit of a, I feel like that's not the right word for it, but it was like a very light feeling that definitely lasted for a couple of days. And I think for those of you who follow me on TikTok, you can even find a video where I discuss this. And I even said, like, yeah, I know this is, you know, I made a very big change. I made a very big move. So I know naturally I'm going to feel normal in a couple of days. I'm putting air quotes in case anyone's just listening. But no, it did. I definitely did feel very, very different. It wasn't like I came out of the mikveh and was just like, well, that was fun. It was, I came out and I was like, wow, like I'm playing for keeps now. You know, whenever we forget to daven, you know, sometimes it's like, but like, at least before it's kind of like, well, it's technically not my job yet, but like now it is. And so even though there's certain things I haven't fully taken on yet, you know, that's different. But like now it's like, okay, now the things that I already was doing, I got to make sure I'm doing them correctly. And I have to make sure that, you know, I work in an environment where I might be the only Jew that some of my students ever meet. Right. So there is an extra layer of, there's an extra layer of, man, I can't find the word for this, but there's an extra layer there. And it adds a level of gravitas that makes it so that I know I have to conduct myself in a certain way. And I mess up all the time, but same. It's still something that I'm very much conscious of. And actually I was talking to my rabbi about this one day and he even says it like, you know, what's going to be the first thing they remember if you leave them with a bad memory? What's the first word that's going to come to mind? So,
yep, it's true. Now I will say that feeling of I'm not doing it enough, good enough, often enough, frequently enough, 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 enough. That is full stop. That is the Yetzer Hara. That is how the great adversary's voice shows up immediately.
Really?
The concept of insufficiency. Absolutely. Because it knows that it's a standard human weakness. We are always comparing ourselves to anybody and everybody else. And so that's how it gets in. It gets in by comparisons and telling you are not good enough. And maybe for a ger, it'll be comparing to someone who was born Jewish. Maybe for someone who was born Jewish, it'll be comparing themselves to Moshe Rabbeinu. There's always a comparison. And that's why it literally says, you know, that I think it's Midrash, don't quote me. You know, basically at the end of his life, God asked him, why were you trying to be like this guy? Why weren't you more Zusha? Because there is no comparison. I say this to my clients all the time. The atoms that make up the cells of your body have never been assembled in this order, in this place, in space, in time, in the history of history, and they will never be assembled that way again. And you are an endangered species and you cannot possibly get it wrong because there will never be another one like you. You can be replaced. You cannot be duplicated. And so to think that you can compare is a fool's errand. Now, the flip side is, are we always supposed to be striving for improvement? Yes. Is it annoying that God set it up with both? Yes. But she's got a very interesting sense of humor, let me tell you. I love this story. Now, you've been officially Jewish. How long?
I'd say about a little over a month now.
So fun! Did you happen to like write down the date, like the dunkiversary?
No, but I can get it for you because thankfully we have internet. And on the internet, when you put things on the internet, it tends to tell you when you did things.
Let me see. Have to give it to me now. I was just curious if you made a note of it, because if you were to ask my husband,
I can tell you, hold on. January 22nd.
Aw, so fun. Okay,
And
so
that
that was actually on the cusp of Gdi and Dli. So the mountain goat and the water bearer. So you, nice. You literally went from Earth, Capricorn, to Heaven, Aquarius, on the cusp day that the signs changed.
interesting. I admit to not knowing too much about kosher astrology. I was aware of that book. I know we were talking about this before the recording for context.
Yes.
It actually is one of those things I've been eyeing because coming out of that new atheist period that I was referring to earlier, to me, if it was for a while, the way my brain operated was if I couldn't see it or hear it or touch it or feel it or smell it or taste it, it didn't exist and it was fake and it was a load of crap.
Yep. I know a lot of people who are like that. I have worked with and coached a lot of people like that, so I completely get that mindset. And obviously, like, I don't debate with them unless they want to debate, because I'm Israeli and I tend to
It's a waste of
eviscerate
time.
people. But it's interesting because I have, and like, we're digressing, but whatever, I don't care. It's my show. I've been doing kosher astrology for 30 years, but I've been doing it privately. It wasn't until last summer where I made one post, just one, and it blew up. It's still my most popular post. And it was like, hey, did you know astrology can be done in a kosher way? And ever since that, my husband, of all people, thank God, he was like, why aren't you incorporating that into your coaching? And I'm like, I don't know. Why am I not?
It's amazing. It is amazing how one social media post can really, take you from one level to the next. I told you about the one that I did earlier. Here's actually a
Yeah.
little fun little side bit. The
Yes,
video
please.
that really got me a big following was taken down for community guideline violations. And it was only up for
Nice.
like and it was only up for like 2 weeks. I forget exactly what had happened. No, I do remember actually. I never watched October 7 footage. I never watched much of it at all. And that was a very conscious decision on my part.
Right.
And then a buddy of mine, a TikTok buddy of mine, actually, you may know him, Captain Izzy. I don't know if you follow Captain
I
Izzy.
do. I know Captain
Captain
Izzy.
Izzy is my buddy. Like we talk off, I mean, we've both been a little busy lately, but off of the internet, offline, we talk all the time. But I remember he actually sent me, it was either him or someone else that sent me the link to some of the footage. And that was the first time I ever saw some of the October 7 footage, and it messed with me. And I made this like 9 minute long rant where I said some very, very choice things about the war and about Gaza. And for this, just for the sake of this video, I don't want to get anyone, I don't want to get it like any community guideline violations of its own. But the video ended up getting taken down, and it got taken down twice. I beat it the first time and got the video back. It got over a million views.
Mazel tov. That's an
And
accomplishment.
then it got taken down the second time, and that was when it never went back up again. But at that point, I had already gotten the follower base. So it was kind of like, well, I guess that video served its purpose. And then after every now and again, every once in a while over the next couple of months, I just one of my videos would just do really well and I'd get like another 1,000 people or so. And now I'm at 15,000. So I'm not exactly
Oh
a
my
superstar, but
gosh.
I think within our niche and our section of TikTok, I'd say I'm about mid-level. There's definitely many who are much more well-known than me, especially since I took, a bit of a sabbatical, over the summer for, my mental health reasons. But,
That's
that,
amazing.
yeah,
By
but
the
that's,
way, that's the fact that that's the world that we're in is so, to me, in my humble opinion, this is so indicative that Mashiach is literally around the corner. Like, we're able to expand the world in such a way where a Jew can find his neshama through boxes on a screen in front of his face. And like suddenly form these lovely familial bonds with humans across the planet who relate to him on a spiritual level. Like this is the stuff of like Jules Verne. Like this is like beyond. And it's so beautiful and magical and godly to me. And I just love that. And like, yeah, you have 15,000 followers because you got a big mouth and you have opinions. I just love
that, and
it.
that's. And that's something that, not to put myself down, but like that's something that like it's like, what do I have to say that people want to hear? And all it is just I'm just running my mouth, and people, for whatever reason, they decide they want to stay and listen to most of the video.
Out of
And
curiosity, what do you do
sure.
with the hate?
honestly, it doesn't really bother me. It really doesn't, because it's just names on a page. It's just user 13897651. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, an occasional mean comment, and it comes with the territory. It comes with the territory, you know, and especially after I finished my conversion. You know, I've definitely had my share of very nice DMs. But I was talking to a colleague of mine the other day, and we were laughing because I was joking about how it made me feel like one of the tribe. Actually, it made me feel it's like, yeah, this is my official welcoming. I feel like I'm really one of the gang now.
I was gonna ask, like, you're painting a target on your back. How does it feel to now be under attack? Do you feel even more loved?
In a strange way, kind of.
Yeah.
It's because, you know, I've always been that person, you know, running my mouth. But here's a bit of a difference for you. So, again, I don't want to go too much into, like, you know, individual political beliefs. But years ago, I was, you know, fuck it. I used to be a hardcore leftist.
Same.
I'm like, let's put it this way. On a bad day, Bernie Sanders was too far right wing for me. Like, that's so.
Wow. So you were so building a bunker and trying to start a commune. Got it.
Oh, no. I was sharing the seize means of production memes on Facebook. That's where I was at the time.
There you go. Okay. I know exactly what flavor of left you were. I got it.
Oh, yeah. No, I was the worst kind. Like, I wasn't quite a tanky, but I wasn't far off either. Which, by the way, that hopefully that provides a little bit more context. When people were surprised that I came out supporting Israel, that's why they were so surprised, because I came from so far left that I should have had a Palestinian flag tattooed on my ass by now.
Correct. Yeah.
And then I was just like, no, I am a human being, and I saw human beings get, you know, attacked and slaughtered, and I'm not okay with that. I don't care what they did or didn't deserve. Yep. And so that was that's what's surprised a lot of people. I am so sorry. What was my original point here? I feel like I just got off track a little bit.
Derail track four. Okay, so next question.
Sure.
Next question is, and this is actually kind of a two-parter.
Yeah, that's fine.
It depends on how you want to answer. The first part of the question is, what is something that you wrestle with in Judaism? Because we are Am Yisrael, we are the ones who wrestle with Hashem. And conversely, what is something that you love about Judaism?
So I can actually start with the love part, because that was actually one of the first, there was a lot of, like, things that I was first initially exposed to with Judaism, but the fact that I could wrestle and I didn't have to feel guilty about it. That was something that, you know, I knew that there were going to be things I was going to struggle with, both in terms of practice, both in terms of, you know, theology. And there's still some things that, you know, the whole idea of monotheism, one God, no problem. Sign me up. We're good. But past that point, there are some things here and there that I do have questions about. But the fact that I am allowed to wrestle with that and not feel guilty over that, and I like to illustrate through contrast. So on the Christian side of things, where, you know, dealing with that growing up, like, it's not exactly unfriendly to questioning, but once you start getting into the Trinity, you're kind of just told, like, it's a mystery, deal with it.
That's what I've heard. I've literally heard people say that exact phrase, like, oh, it's beyond human comprehension. Just go with it.
Exactly. Yes. Now, okay. Yeah, but everything outside of that you can question, no problem. You'll have a great time. But once you get to there, that's the no-go zone. Now, and then in Islam, and I'll never forget this, my stepfather once said to me, I forget what I had said, but he said to me, like, you're not allowed to question this. Like, you cannot question this. But I do want to be fair. I do want to be fair by saying I don't remember what it was that I said that made him say that. So I don't want to villainize them there. But even still, there were just some things you're not allowed to question in Islam.
You're being really nice, considering that no one will ever know who it is anyway. But okay, that's fine. Point is, you love questioning, and I love that you love that, because that's something we're really good at.
So that was one of the things I loved about that. Like, okay, I don't have it all figured out right now. Good enough. You know, as long as you're making a sincere effort, you know, you're dealing with it. That's one of the things I absolutely love about it, amongst other things. But that was definitely one of the first things. Now, in terms of the things I struggle with, it's actually a lot more. It's really more like the ritualistic stuff. So, you know, coming out of, I would say that, like, even though I dealt with Islam, like, I really haven't dealt with it directly in a long time. Whereas Christianity, one thing I left out earlier for the sake of time was that there was a brief period back in about 2019, I was exploring Orthodox Christianity. Obviously, it didn't work. But that was my last real encounter with it. But, you know, Christianity, and I don't even mean this, I don't mean this disrespectfully, it is a bit more vibes based. Yes, there are rituals. Yes, there are set prayers. But Judaism is more formalized in the sense, you know, we do have our three daily prayers. We do have our dietary restrictions. Mm-hmm. We do have certain things we have to do at different points during the year. We do have certain days we have to fast. I mean, Christians have that too, so that's not fair. But, you know, there are a lot more, there's work to be done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were talking earlier, you know, sometimes I the morning gets so busy when I'm trying to get my day ready that I miss Shacharit, and then you know, I already know you address this with the Yetzer Hara, but it's like at that point I feel like I can't wear my kippah, because then I feel like I'm just kind of, I feel like I'm lying to Hashem if I wear my kippah after not doing Shacharit, and I feel like there's a bit of a cosplaying element to it.
I will ask you the same question I ask every single human being, because I don't want to be my mother and offer unsolicited advice, but do you want to know what I think about that?
Sure.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Listen, I know we're making an episode here. We got to entertain the viewers. By all means, let's do this.
For real though, I have to ask if you're sure. Okay. Yeah. I always
it's no longer times. It is no longer unsolicited.
Okay, good. Listen. If let's say, for the sake of argument, I assume you live in Podunk, USA someplace where there aren't a lot.
Yeah, sure. Let's
and
go with
some
that.
Some kiddo in your, I guess you work at a school. Some kiddo someplace walks up to you and says, "Hey, Mr. Robert, I understand that you're a Jew," and you say yes, and then he asks you, "Why is it okay for you to wear your symbol of being Jewish some days and not other days?" What are you going to tell him?
Well, to be fair, I'm always wearing something like this. For the listeners, I'm showing my Star David necklace. I actually
but
lost
not
my
everyone
old one.
Can see the neckline, but people can generally see a kippah. So I guess my perspective is simply that one of the beautiful things that I love about Judaism is that we are designed flawed. We are designed not to be perfect. That's what the angels are. The angels are perfect and they don't have free will. We have free will, but by default, we have to be imperfect. And I find that to be a lovely give and take, yin and yang. But we're designed to be flawed and to constantly be striving. That's what they talk about in Tanya, this concept of the Beinoni, of the intermediary, of like, you're not the worst of the worst. You're not the best of the best. You're just keeping your head above water. And so this idea that we miss the mark and that we are not failures, we are not cast out, we are not cast aside, we are not thrown away. It's simply God going, sweetheart, course correct. You missed that. Go right. And that you are still loved and that your worth in the eyes of Hashem is static no matter what you do, no matter how bad you screw up, no matter how many times you miss the mark. That is one of those things that I love. And so for you to deprive yourself of this thing you fucking earned because you missed the mark, I'm putting up air quotes, I feel is a deep disservice to your badass neshama, sir. If anything, I would think that wearing the kippah would be a lovely reminder of, oh yeah, I just have to try harder tomorrow or try different. That's
a good way of looking at it. And it's something that it's one of those things that like, I can be consciously aware of that, but you know, the way that our brains are, you know, sometimes you can talk yourself into things.
We feel how we feel. I get
it. So it's like logical. I should have used the word logically. I that is even something I'm aware of in the moment. Cause you know, it is something that, you know, to be frank, I worked my ass off for it. You know, I studied hard for a year to take a dip in that pool and take a dip in that mikvah.
Yes, you did.
So no, I completely get where you are coming from.
There's also a really, maybe not for you, but there's a heavy toll that some Gerim go through of having to walk away from everything they knew, walk away from the people they knew, walk away from the family they knew. I have read books. I've not enjoyed them, but I've read books from supposedly Gadolim, like the greats of our generation, who flat out said like, a Ger has no mother and father. They must cut off their parents from the moment they go into mikvah. And I'm like, I beg your fucking pardon. I'm sorry. What? Their parents are Avram and Sarah. I'm sorry. If I'm having a bad day, I'm going to call my dad, my mom, whatever. Like, so Gary, go through a lot. So you've earned it, babe. You've earned it in my humble opinion.
I can actually add something onto that too.
Please.
A little bit of a background piece of information. By the time I finished my conversion, all the people that were not going to be okay with it had already cut me off, including some family members. So that was already taken. So I was able to really kind of walk in with the people that were still around were still there, and the people that were not had already left a long time before this.
That's so gross. My husband went through the same thing. He was rejected by every single person in his family except his parents.
I'll tell you one last little thing about this, and then it sounds like you want to get to the next thing. There was actually a very big decision. There was a very big aspect to my decision to finish my conversion. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned before that I did have a Muslim stepfather, and he said, and I keep using past tense, but the fact is, he's actually still married to my mom. Mm-hmm. And he just, and when he saw me, this is before I started doing a lot of, you know, social media stuff. He saw me posting in defense of the Jewish community. And that played a huge, huge role in him disowning me.
Wow.
Now, the one thing I want to clarify, because again, I don't want to just straight sit here and straight villainize. There was a personal side to it that I'm not going to get into. And had that been why he was angry, I would not have had a leg to stand on. Mm. However, he chose to take my defense of the Jewish community. And that was what a lot of his goodbye was built around. Mm. And even though it was almost
like a personal beef between you guys.
Yeah. And because it really did come out of nowhere. And again, there was a personal side to it that actually was my fault. And had he just calmed on that, I would have had nothing to say. I would have had no leg to stand on. Mm-hmm. But that's not the path he chose.
Well, but, we are, you know, the world scapegoat. So, you know.
Yeah. And so one of the things that I was thinking about actively during the conversion process, and it was even something that was on my mind, like in the days leading up to, is that I knew that when I went into that mikvah, any chance of reconciliation would probably be gone forever. And at the end of the day, I decided that he was the one that made that decision. And he was going to have to be the one to live with it, because I've made my choices. I've made my decision. I know what path I chose. And, you know, anyone that is not okay with that, it's not their problem. I'm happy with the decisions that I made, and I'm not going to let, you know, anyone else, you know, pull me back from it.
That's incredibly inspiring, I have to say. So you've told me something you love. You told me that you wrestle with some of the ritual practices. Totally, totally get that. I get that a lot from people, especially the men, because there are so many more time-bound mitzvot than for women, obviously. Now, the next question is, what is it that, if you could name one thing, a value, a moral, a teaching, a holiday, a practice, what is one thing that's inherently Jewish that you just would share with the whole world if the world was willing to listen to you for 15 minutes?
And one value. So of the questions that you and I discussed that you sent me, this is one of the ones that I really had to like sit there and chew on. So I'm not even sure if there is just one thing, but, you know, tying back to what we were talking about earlier, just the idea that you could just say you're sorry, stop doing it, and, you know, you've improved yourself. The fact that you can continually improve, that is, to me, is one of the things that I absolutely love. And if you want something else to add on top of that, and maybe this is just like a me thing, maybe this is I don't know how many people will have this experience, but Judaism really taught me to be a lot more analytical. It really taught me to read things a lot closer. It taught me to, you know, I often say just read the words on the page, and it's deeper than that, but it really is reading the words on the page and really understanding what it is you're reading versus just, you know, skimming and getting the gist of things. And it's something that, you know, as an educator, I do try to take into the classroom where, you know, read the words on the page. Tell me what it is that you are reading. Tell me what it is that you have to understand. And, you know, granted, I'm talking about, like, you know, worksheets meant for eighth graders in this context. Right. But at the same time, I'm trying to import that experience of getting both the surface level meaning, which is important, and, you know, deeper things beyond that whenever I'm just reading the words on the page.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. That one of the things that really surprised me coming back to Judaism as a Baal Tshuva, having been pagan for 20 years, was the understanding that there are four layers of how to read Torah.
Pardes.
I had no idea that it was that serious. I was like, it's just a book. Like, why are we so, you know? And over time, obviously, I learned, you know, how Pardes works. And you know, for those folks who don't know or are not religious or not Jewish yet, whatever it is, Pardes stands for Pshat Remez Drash Sod, meaning the simple, the words, brain.
All right, so simple all the way to this, to the
simple to ultra hidden, like mystique,
hidden meanings and deeper layers.
Yeah. And so being able to, I equate it a lot to like reading Shakespeare. Like you could say, mm-hmm. you shall find me a grave man. Like that means many different things depending on the context.
It does. And
so I didn't realize that until I started learning what Pardes meant.
Yeah. And you know that, and that goes back to, you know, the words on the page. Like, yeah, we can get into the layers and how deep things go and like the more mystical or esoteric meanings, but it all starts with just understanding the words on the page themselves.
Yep. Absolutely. And taking the time to understand it and not mm-hmm. thinking that you can like hack your way through it or cheat your way through it. Like there's no AI for that. Although
yeah.
I love the good one. But
yeah, during like early in my studying process, I did read the Tanakh cover to cover, which a lot of people were like impressed when I told them that, but I was like, I didn't understand most of what I read. I'm rereading most of it now. And I'm like, I read this once before in my life. I have no memory of this. So it's not even something like I tell you, like, yeah, as part of my studying, yes, I read it from cover to cover. I've read one word in front of the other until there were no more words to read. However, I barely remember a thing, and it's definitely going to be a book that I spend a lot of time trying to, I'm going to be spending a lot more time with it to try to be able to navigate it and be able to understand it a lot better.
Same. And please take comfort in knowing that there are people who have spent every waking moment of their lives doing that, and they still feel like they're novices on the day they die.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a thing. We are obsessed with this friggin' book. All right. So the last question that I have for you, good sir, because I am just, I just love your story. I love your backstory. I love everything that you stand for, is the whole point of this podcast is to highlight that a Jew is a Jew and that it's important for us to, number one, love our fellow. V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha is my philosophy. I have it in a framed photo on my wall. And number two, that it's okay to be different and to see God differently and to Jew differently. So my good friend, my social media explosive influencer, Robert, how do you Jew? How do you bring Judaism uniquely to the world?
Not gonna lie, this was the question that I was I was the most nervous about when
no pressure.
We were honestly, I wish I had a really good answer for you, but you know, I'd like to think that, you know, we don't just bring one thing. You know, I just wish I could think of, you know.
Is there a way that you carry Judaism into the world
proudly.
The way you move that's uniquely you?
I'm very proudly Jewish at work. I'm very proudly Jewish in, you know, in almost every environment that I enter. Now granted, I live in a state where, you know, a lot of the anti-Semitism that's been, you know, prevalent in the world today just doesn't have the sway. But one thing I do hope that I can bring is strength, in the sense that I'm not hiding it. I'm wearing it proudly. If someone asks me if I'm Jewish, I say it proudly with my chest out. Mm-hmm. I am unapologetic about it. I'm unapologetic about it. Thankfully, it has not been too controversial in my personal life. Mm-hmm. Because really, even though, you know, I do my online stuff, I'm really the same person both on and offline. Mm-hmm. If someone asks me my thoughts on something related to Judaism, I'm like, I'm going to try my best to give my honest opinion, but I'm also not going to be afraid to share that opinion. I'm not sure how to best answer this question, so feel free to
like what you're saying is you're proudly Jewish, you're unapologetically Jewish, you try to represent Judaism wherever you go, and you're not interested in succumbing to pressure when you're conveying who you are as a Jew.
I ain't tap dancing.
Thank God. No trembling knees here.
I want to make that into a shirt, just like Menachem Begin's face as like converted into like an anime face. It goes, I am not a Jew with trembling knees.
Yep.
So if anyone makes that shirt, send me one.
You know what? Preferably. It's funny you should say that, because I actually actually have created some shirts. I will share the link with you later. They're on my TikTok shop. Because it's not Menachem Begin's thing, although that's a brilliant idea.
He has had a really cool quote about it. That's all.
It really does. It's a great quote. My shirt says, it's like a jersey. It says property of, and then it says Hashem Elokeinu, established 2448. And then on the back of it, it has the number 18, like a jersey. And mm-hmm. it says B'nai Israel Giant Slayers. Because I want people who buy it, I want us all to be on the same team. And I don't follow mm-hmm. sports. So that's the best I could do for making a
sports ball. Listen, all I know sports about sports ball. Is that like balls go into hoops and stuff and numbers go up on boards. That's all I know about sports.
Yeah. Sometimes they're that's round. Like, sometimes they're pointy. I don't know. But I want us to all be on the same team.
Yeah. And everyone playing those things looks like they're having a great time. So, you know, no, not going to knock them.
Unless they get injured. Then they look like they are very unhappy.
Unless it's hockey.
Oh, that's true. Then they smile with no teeth. All right. So I want to say thank you again so much to my incredible, incredible friend, Robert, for hanging out with me for this little brief amount of time. If you guys want to learn more about him, his social info is going to be available in the show notes. And this show should be released sometime during the week of February 23rd. Email to Hashem, hopefully. And I will make sure all the links are in there. If you are interested in getting a shirt, please know that a percentage of the proceeds of my shirts and my Tears of Anti-Zionist candles are available and going to my shul for our construction because we need to fix our building. So if you would like to give to charity, buying one of my shirts or candles will help do that. And we always give tzedakah because that's a good thing to do. Other than that, I want to thank you for being here and I hope you have an incredible night. And we're done.